I guess we'll just push this button and see what happens. It's the news, according to me. Well, good morning. It is Thursday morning. This is a double feature. This is a bonus double feature this morning. It is Thursday, May 23rd, 8:57 a.m. Central Time. Should be 9:57 for those of you on the right coast. We have so much going on. A few things I want to get into. The first thing we need to get into is my cup. We've got to get into my cup. We have this very bad cup of hot tea that does not have near enough sugar in it. And I don't know what to do about that. There's some more sugar over there I could probably put into it. It's just, I don't want to do that. But it's just, it's not that great. But now, on the other side of this, the good news is, the bright spot in my day is I have Chick-fil-A sweet tea in my other cup. It's cold, and it's good. It's a little bit watered down. I've put ice in it a few times. I actually got it yesterday. I am in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Arkansas, as they call it, some places. Yeah, that's where I am. I will be here till late this evening. I thought I was going to get a show out earlier this morning, but my plans have kind of changed for the day. And right now, it looks like I'll be able to do the show here just to kind of take my time and relax. There's not a whole lot going on. So, in fact, it's not. There's like so little going on that by tomorrow morning, or actually by tonight, I'll be on a flight, and I will be going to Columbia, Missouri. I'll be in Columbia, Missouri tomorrow morning. I'll be able to do the show from Columbia tomorrow morning as well, because it's going to be there for quite part of the day, most of the day. So I should have plenty of time in the morning to get the show put out. I'm hoping to do a regular show. Now, I've got my laptop with me with my regular microphone this morning. In fact, going a little more pro this morning, more of a pro podcaster, they call it. I don't have my Procaster, but I've got my caster, a little Rode microphone up here, which is much better. And I got the air conditioner turned off. Otherwise, you'd be here. That's all you could hear is a fan in the back. It sounded like I was on an airplane, an old airplane. So we have a few things to get into regarding the news. I've had a chance to listen to some reports about this whole Nisai, whatever his name was, from Iran, this helicopter crash. I've read a few things, and I've listened to quite a few commentaries on it, some people from Iran. My question is, why don't we get Valerie Jarrett's take on this? Is she happy about what happened? I see they're talking about, well, there's Iranians that they're celebrating in the streets. Not so much in Iran. There is some of that. There were some people shooting off fireworks and doing some celebrating. Those people probably will not be alive much longer. However, the around the world, people who are not living in Iran, the Persians who they consider themselves, that they want to see this regime taken out, they're dancing in the streets. Now, there were people, and you can find people around the world who were dancing to anything nowadays. So it's just, the news media can craft their little narrative and how the world feels about it. And I don't know if any of you have ever taken, gone through YouTube. I spend a lot of time on YouTube, probably more than I should, but I do it for my job. It's my job. So I spend quite a bit of time on YouTube. And one of the things that I've noticed on YouTube is they have a lot of these guys are taking polls now. They'll put out a poll. Do you think this, or do you think that, what's your pick for this? Now, Russell Brand is kind of interesting. His polls are pretty cool, really. He says, "What should the topic be on today's show? Should it be this, this, or this?" And he does it. He listens to his audience, and his audience will say, "He's got millions of followers. He has grown exponentially. He's also now on Rumble because he got banned on YouTube." This is a guy who's pretty much down to earth. Center of the road, kind of, just tells it like it is kind of guy. I don't agree with everything he says. Obviously, I don't agree with anything anybody says. I don't agree with everything I say. But it's one of those things where he's pretty much straight. I can deal with people like that. I can deal with people who have an opinion opposed to mine, if they know why they have that opinion, and the opinion is based on some sound logic. We can have different philosophies. There's different financial philosophies on how you manage your funds, how you manage your money. There's different, all kinds of differences in those kinds of philosophies. And I feel like, you know, one person can say, I'm never going to do this or never going to do that. I'm going to go this route. Another person might say, I'm going to go all in on that. If you look to the rich man, poor man, what is his name? Teriyaki? I don't know what his name is. Kiyosaki. Kawasaki. He believes in going completely in the debt, using debt completely, living on debt, riding the debt surfboard, leveraging yourself to the point where you are beyond leverage. Your leverages have levers. You put levers on your leverage. He is all in on that. And he's rich. Now, there are a few people who can do that. Not everybody can do that. And you can't do it on a small scale. You have to have a mega, mega, mega richness to do that. Now, what happens when you die and the banks take it all back? See, this is one of those things where is it really wealth? I mean, yeah, you can build wealth and you can end up with a very wealthy man if you can hold, you know, can sustain that for long enough. You can build some wealth. The reality is, and this is, I think this is something that I think, I believe it was Donald Trump, I think it was his dad, I think it was who said this to him as a child, I believe, unless it was Donald Trump that said it to his son, Donald Jr. I'm not positively sure on this. Either way, I know that it's something that has affected Donald Trump, and I think he understands what this is. One of the things he said was they walked out of a bank and they saw this bum on the street, living on the street, a homeless guy. Excuse me. And the thing, what he said to his child was, that man's worth more than I am. He realized at that moment that because he was so in debt, that his debt exceeded his wealth, that he literally, if he cashed everything in, would still owe money. He would still be in debt. That guy on the street probably had no debts whatsoever. Probably. On the balance sheet, his position looked better than his position, being a man who, quote, owned all this stuff, but didn't really own it because the banks owned him. That philosophy, I think, if you can grasp that and still be able to use leverage to do what you need to do, you're a unique individual. Now, there are people out there who think they can. They're usually wrong. And they don't find out that they're wrong until it's too late. The sound principles of the Dave Ramsey philosophy out there, by and large, for 95% of the population, it's going to work. And it's going to work well. And 90% of the population can do it. The Kiyosakis of the world, there is less than 1% of the people who can and will do it that way. There's not enough credit in the world. To hear the guy talk about it, it's like, oh yeah, well, you can just get, you know, mega rich by doing all this and just leverage this. And not everybody can do that. If you have 90% of your community doing that, nobody's working. Everybody's living on interest. And what I mean by that is they're living on debt. They're paying interest. Economically, you cannot do that in a society. It doesn't work that way. but there are a few people who rise to the top on that. And there are a few people who, and he, what he does is he, you know, he writes books about that, and he tries to convince others to do the same thing. Now, in a large, population of, 300 million people, you will be able to find enough people, even if you find, what's 1% of that? 1% of 300 million is 30 million. I'm sorry, 3 million. So 3 million people, if you can sell them your program to be in the 1%ers, it's going to work for those people. But not everybody can do that. Everybody can do, essentially, everybody can do the Dave Ramsey principles. There's other things out there, and I've looked into other methods of managing your funds, managing your money. In fact, I need to talk to my financial guy today about this. So I've got to get his take on it. You can trade options, you can trade commodities, you can do other day trading, you can do all kinds of things. And again, this is where people get into a easy money mentality, double your money quicker mentality. And obviously, there's always risks involved in everything. There's risks involved in just normal investing. There's risks involved in life. So you have to accept some of that. And at some point, I'm planning on having a show about this, more about the money aspect. Now, I'm not a financial counselor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a doctor. But there is this financial. I just thought of another thought. I've got to get it out when I get this done, before we start dipping into some of the other things. But the financial aspect of managing your life is critical, and I think it's something that's not taught in school. Very few schools have a really good financial management, personal financial management courses in there. Now, I do know that there's a Christian school near us where we live, and they actually have a Dave Ramsey youth program in their school. They teach it. Sound money principles. It is, I assume it's pretty good. I think it's awesome that they're teaching them anything with regard to money. Especially to say that they should teach them to stay out of debt. And there's some debt that's obviously, people are just going to go there. And supposedly debt on your home is supposedly, a good thing. Well, it is an asset. I don't know that paying rent, if I'm paying rent, I'm paying somebody else's mortgage. Maybe. Maybe. There are a lot more things that go into owning a home than just paying the mortgage. And most rentees, most of the landlords out there who are renting their properties out will tell you they're really not, unless they own the property cash out. If they have a mortgage on that home, and they have insurance, and they have property taxes, they have maintenance and upkeep on that facility. There is going to be probably a net loss if they really figure in their time and anything else for what they're renting that place for. If you have the time and the money and the wherewithal and the income to be able to buy your own home with a loan, and then invest in, pay for your own insurance, pay for your own property taxes and your own maintenance and upkeep and all the things that happen every 6 to 8 years, every time you have to replace an air conditioning system or a heating system, refrigerator, which, sometimes when you rent an apartment, you didn't need to replace your refrigerator. Some of your appliances might be yours. But those kinds of things, you don't think about those kinds of things, and neither do the landlords. And they typically don't pass on the prices of those things. They're looking at having the property eased into an investment. So they're looking at renting the place for 10 years, having the mortgage paid off, And then having that property that they paid $100,000 for be worth maybe $150,000 when they get done. And they've overall, they've put in $130,000. They've, you know, they've made $20,000. And if you take your time out of that, you realize you didn't really make anything at all. You could have made more just working at McDonald's and not owning the home and having the hassle of a renter. I'm not saying all renters are bad. I'm just saying it's really hard to find good renters. Now, commercial buildings, a little different. It's a little easier to find good renters. However, they're taking risks usually with their business. They can go broke and you can lose your renters that way, or they can maybe not afford to pay the rent because they're not making any money at their business. This is where a commercial property can, the property owner can really help that small business. If they have an interest in that person's business, they can actually help them promote things. They can help, you know, put a sign up here. You can do whatever, you know, to do this to make your property more attractive to more business. That helps them and it helps the owner. Those people have a tendency to be a little bit better because they're running a business. They're doing a better job of keeping their bills paid or trying to, and paying their rent, because they know if they're out on the street that there's no eviction. A person who's renting a commercial property for the purposes of a business, there's very few eviction protections for them, like there are for someone who's a family who owns, you know, they're living in a rental apartment, and especially in the state of Michigan. I got to tell you, I would never own a rental home in Michigan. You can't evict anybody. It's like a 90-day process. They can get off scot-free, not paying any rent for like 3 months, I think. At least that's the way it was. And there's nothing you can do about it. And that's after you file the proper forms to evict them. You're sitting there with 3 months of somebody living in your that you can't collect on them. And then they just move out. And you can't go after them. You can't get anything that's in arrears. It just blows my mind. I would never own a rental property like that. Now, having said that, unless I had them pay a year's rent up front with an eviction notice that automatically kicked in at, you know, like in October for January. Now, let's get into a few more things. Now, one of the things I want to talk about failed to mention this at the beginning of the show. This is a double feature. I think I mentioned it briefly, but what happened was yesterday I recorded a show. It disappeared. It didn't disappear. I couldn't get online. I could not log into the internet from the hotel I was at. And I believe what ended up happening is my computer was doing it just fine. It was finding the Wi-Fi. It was finding my phone and I was trying to hotspot. I was trying to do everything. I believe everything was working fine, but my browser that I was trying to use apparently was an outdated browser, and it was still on my docket. I use a MacBook Pro. It's an older one. And apparently the new updated Firefox kept the old icon and it would not work. It just sat there with a spinning wheel. And this morning I logged into this and everything seemed to be working fine with the Wi-Fi. I did shut down the computer and rebooted everything. And that seemed to do the job with this particular Wi-Fi. But then I pulled up the other Firefox version and everything started working fine. Well, reasonably fine. So there's one particular website that I couldn't seem to get working. But it's working now, by the way. I just clicked on it. There it is. Sure enough, it's going to work. Well, that's interesting. That's very, very interesting. And, people are listening. Actually, people listening yesterday, even though I had no show, couldn't publish my show. So this show, at the end of this show, it's not a tremendously good, great show, yesterday's show, but there was a show yesterday. It was fairly short. It will be posted at the end of this show. I think that's the way I'm going to do it. I'm not positive yet. I may put out a separate show. I'm planning on putting out, this is kind of a double feature. Excuse me. You don't usually get to hear me cough because I have a cough button on my home studio. I just push a little button, I can cough and sneeze and whine and cry. You can't hear that stuff. So the double feature will be there for you to enjoy, either at the end of this podcast or in its own podcast itself. Now, let's get into this whole thing with the helicopter crash. There have been one of the reasons I was talking about, you know, Valerie Jarrett is she's the puppet master for Obama, and in like kind, Obama is the puppet master for Joe Biden. And there's, you know, is she celebrating this? You know, what's her opinion of this? Because she's from Iran. This is, you know, why do you think we had this great Iran deal going on? Why billions of dollars are being given back to them or released to them? Of course, then they end up things happening. Now, there's one person who came out. I was just listening to Patrick Bet David, PBD. He is this one guy. And I usually respect what this guy's opinions are. He's usually pretty right-leaning, conservative, understanding guy. But he came out with this whole thing. One of his things that he said was confusing to him was how Israel, within an hours of this of hearing of this crash, said it wasn't us. Well, don't you think that when everybody points the finger at you and blames you for everything, that when something happens in the world, the first thing you want to say is it wasn't me. Oh, it wasn't me. It wasn't us. Wouldn't that be kind of a natural response? Because everybody points the finger at them. And right now, everybody's pointing the finger at them for all kinds of things. It's like, we didn't do this. Now, if they could have, I think they would have. Or if they would have, they could have. They would have if they could have. They could if he would. Could have, should have, would have. Now, here's how I see this. You got people screaming out, "Well, that was too soon. Why would they come out and say that right away? Well, nobody even knew if they were dead or not." Well, the plane went. They knew their helicopter was crashed. So that whether they were alive or not, regardless of that, Israel wanted to say, "We didn't shoot it down. We didn't. It wasn't us. This accident was not because of us." Now everybody's saying, "Well, that's suspicious because we didn't even know anything about it." It's suspicious. Now, if Israel would have waited a day and said anything, that would have been suspicious. Well, why did you wait so long? Why did you wait so long? If they would have waited another hour, they would say, "Well, why are you coming out so soon? You don't know anything about it." There was no perfect time response. You know, what would be the perfect time response? Nobody ever comes out and asks that question. Well, what would have been the perfect response? Now, of course, when Liz Cheney was talking about Donald Trump, saying, "Well, he should have stopped those people from doing," oh, is he supposed to personally go down there and stand in the way of those people breaking into the Capitol building? People who are breaking windows, or the people who are unlocking the doors from the inside? Which ones was he supposed to stop there, Liz? When he came out and made the public statement, you know, what would you have done, Liz? "Well, I would have said this, and I would have said that, because I should be president, and this is what should have been done. If I was the president, I would have done this." So you're going to impeach him because he didn't do what you wanted him to do. This is kind of rhetoric, the kind of ridiculousness that we get so often from the straw man, coulda, shoulda, woulda, deranged individuals who are out there who just simply can't stand Trump. So we have some interesting things happening. Speaking of derangement, I'm going to go on to this next topic. We have this interesting thing happening. I was forced at gunpoint this morning to listen to Morning Joe. I was at the hotel here. I was downstairs eating breakfast, and it's kind of creepy in this hotel. I've been in this hotel before. There's this one guy who's always here eating breakfast. He spends 3 hours here. The breakfast is from, I think it's about from 4 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. And every time I've been down to eat breakfast there, if it's been any time after 6 a.m., this guy's sitting there eating breakfast. And he eats breakfast. He sits there, stares out the window. And he stays there till 9 o'clock. And he's a little bit creepy. And I every time I've been here, he's been down there eating. He just eats and eats. He doesn't eat fast. He's not doesn't eat like a pig. He'll sit there and stare out the window with his plate empty, and then he'll go get some more food. It's just interesting. Don't know what's going on there. And this has been going on. I've been to this hotel probably a few times in the last 6 months. So I'm not sure. There's something troubling going on there. He's probably a Democrat. It seems as if he's taking advantage of the free breakfast somehow. Somebody's letting him just eat breakfast there. I don't know what's going on. So anyway, we have, but I had to listen to Morning Joe this morning. And the banner across the bottom. Now, this is, keep in mind, there are all kinds of back channels in the way people communicate within these political parties and the establishment, everything that happens here. This has especially been honed on the left. The leftists out there, the left media, legacy media, is very much attuned to what they're doing here. They're all on the same page. There's kind of three groups of them. So you got the people who are currently in power, and they're part of the powers that be that can make the real changes. There's the deep state that kind of runs that whole thing, the administrative state that's behind all of that. So you got that part of things. Then you've got the media. And the media, it tends to be their way of communicating. The media will go out and do the polling of the people, kind of get the feel for what's going on. And they'll say, how can we spin the narrative to change the culture here? How can we change the story to fit the way we want to guide the people to go? In other words, how do we manipulate the people? Really is what they're saying. But they don't see it that way. So then they can communicate. So they've kind of got their finger on the pulse of what's going on. And then they figure out how to manipulate the people. And they run their little narratives and their little war games. And they do all their little, well, if we hit it with this angle, if we hit it with that angle, if we do this or that, how do we readjust this story to make it, you know, what we want it to be? Then you have so the people in the news media are out there making these statements and doing this and that, and this is the way it is. And they'll have these little banners down along the bottom. The news media in the last 2 weeks, I have seen this is escalating. What's been happening is they're putting out these signals to the Democrat, the DNC, the party itself, the establishment, the people who are in power, the deep state, and those who kind of run and control things from behind the shadow government, behind everything, the Barack Obamas and all the Clintons and all that kind of things that are back there. They're putting out these little signals right now. One of the things that they had at the bottom of the banner for over 10 minutes was something to the effect of, people care more about their economic situation. They're more concerned about Biden's economic policies than they are Trump's policies on abortion. Who is that for? Why would they put that there? That's not for their listeners, for the people who are watching their show. This is being put out there as a message to the DNC. Now, if you think, and again, I've said this many times, there's going to be an October surprise, and it probably is going to happen actually in September. There's going to be a transfer of power, and I do not believe Joe Biden will be on the ticket. I'm going on record saying that, and I could be wrong. They are waking up and realizing the fact that Joe Biden is not going to win unless they do something drastic with election tampering. They realize this at this point. They realize they've lost this. I think the media realizes it more than anything, and they're trying to convey it to the DNC and try to get it across to them. Hey, we have got to do something different here. I believe the DNC has a plan. I believe they're ready to pull the plug on Joe and do some major shifting. And I think that they probably have looked at their rules and they're going to figure out how to do that before, during, or after the convention. I'm not sure how that's going to... I believe it's going to be post-convention. I doubt that it will happen during the convention. I think Joe will be the nominee at the convention. And then he's going to resign after the convention. The convention's in August. This is how I'm seeing it unfold. I just knowing the rules in the DNC, knowing how they... I'm not a DNC operative. I don't know. All I can do is read and understand what their rules are. Now, there may be other rules out there that, of course, there's all kinds of... I didn't know anything about superdelegates until they were out there functioning. All that whole concept was ridiculous. So we have this situation where either the powers that be want Trump to win, for whatever reason that they've got, I'm sure it's not good reasons they want him to win, or they have another candidate in mind that they think is going to be able to pull it off. Either way, they are not going to run Joe Biden. They're realizing this guy's going to lose. Now, the Bill Maher's out there Bill has made some interesting comments here. I think he's even kind of realizing, hey, Trump could win. Or that Biden really is not the better choice here. And my question to these people is, we've got to get rid of Donald Trump. We've got to have him arrested. Why do you need to get rid of him? Why do you need to get him off of the ballot? What is, if he's such a bad guy, and now think about this. And if I was on the Bill Maher show, I would go down this line of questioning. I would start with, Bill, you think that you're right on the issue of Donald Trump, that he's a bad man, he shouldn't be president. And so you think you're smarter about this than the people who are willing to vote for Donald Trump, that they're just ignorant or they're dumb, one of the two. They just don't know what you know about the man, or they just disagree with you because they're stupid, or because you're so smart. Is that correct? You think you're smarter than them, the people who are willing to vote for Donald Trump. Not just Donald Trump. We're not talking about Donald Trump now. We're talking about his voters. Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because they just don't understand. They're just stupid. I don't know if he would say it that way. But that's really what he's thinking. He's thinking he's more intelligent than these basket of deplorables who are willing to vote for such a terrible person. Okay, Bill, you believe in democracy, right? He's a big democracy guy. So the majority of the people, right, should make those decisions. Well, guess what? The majority of the people, if they vote for Donald Trump, that means the majority of the people, you think the majority of the people in this country are stupid. The majority of the voters in this country are stupid. They're dumb, ignorant. They're not as smart as you. That's really what he's saying. He doesn't trust the American people at all to make the right decision on this. They feel like they have to influence them. Well, I'm endorsing somebody else. Oh, who cares? I don't care who you're endorsing. Are you going to pay my bills? Are you going to do what? Are you going to come take care of the problems when my stuff breaks? And no, you're going to sit there in your chair, throw spitballs at everything, and then when you make an endorsement, all of a sudden somebody is supposed to be influenced by that. People do have a tendency. Now, actually, the reason I was getting into this whole thing about the polls that people are taking on YouTube, I'm getting back to it, is because it's interesting when you see those polls pop up on YouTube, and they have this poll of, do you think that so-and-so or whoever, whatever was, you know, whatever happened. And when it comes down to one of those things, you feel the peer pressure. It's like, I want to pick the one that everybody else is picking. I want to pick the right one. I don't want to just pick on that. I kind of think that one, but the other one might be right. So I'm gonna pick this one. What did everybody else pick? I want to see what everybody else picked first. See if I agree with them. And sometimes, I pick on something that's different, but there's a reason I pick on something different. And sometimes I'm at the 12% range and everybody else is 50% something else. Because there's usually more than one, you know, more than three or four options. But I have a reason for it. Now, somebody said, you know, should Joe Biden debate Donald, or should Donald Trump debate Joe Biden? Either way, when they asked the question like that. Well, my answer was no to that. I think it was, should Donald Trump debate Joe Biden? I think 75% of the people said yes, or 80% or something like that. I said no. There was another percentage that said, I don't know. But I don't believe he should. I think it's going to be a waste of time. They're going to use it as a trap. They're going to try to manipulate the guy, malign the guy, make the guy look bad. That's all they care about right now at this point, even if they know Joe's going to lose, because Joe's not going to be the candidate. That was my reason for saying no. He shouldn't debate him. What he should say is, I'm not debating Joe. I'm going to debate who are you going to put up to be the real candidate in November? That's what I want to know. Now, Vivek Ramaswamy was very clear about this. He totally agrees the same thing. He's, come on, put out your candidate, who you're going to be, and we'll just have it out now. They need to surprise somebody so they don't have time to be vetted. This is their whole plan. It is if you understand the nature of the leftists, now, and I've learned this from the school of Rush Limbaugh. He knew liberals, he knew the left, like he knew the back of his hand. He would always talk about this. He understood them far better than they understood themselves. And this is one of those things, I think, in any relationship, especially when you're in a relationship with some people, certain people, and you have the issue of whether or not they, you know, if you can understand somebody else, you know, you seek to understand more than you seek to be understood. That kind of concept is when you can really understand the other person, where they're coming from, why they're saying the things they're saying, why they have these, you know, weird, wacky ideas or not. It gives you kind of an ability to interact with them that goes beyond. Not to be manipulative, you could do that. I've seen some counselors do that. They have an understanding of the human psyche and the way people act, so they try to manipulate people into a particular way of thinking. That's not counseling, that's manipulation. I've seen that happen among many counselors. That is actually a secular technique. Not that I'm a counselor or a certified psychologist. Just saying. I could be psycho, but that's a whole other thing. I might be certifiable. So, but it's interesting that when you can understand your opponent of the idea, let's say you have an idea that you're arguing with, and you understand your opponent's thought process in that, you have an advantage to be able to help persuade them to think properly, to think along your line of things, but you have to understand them first. And you can work with where their line of reasoning is, and you can take them, look, if you believe this, and this, then this is where you're at with this, and this is the points, and you can point out the weaknesses in that point, and then you can show, because you've worked through it yourself. Well, this is, I think, where the Republicans, the conservatives, the not the rhino Republicans, but they need to kind of continue to steel themselves against this kind of thing. The emotional rhetoric, irrational activity that happens on the left. And work through that kind of thing. Now, having said all that, I realize I've gone way over time on this show. Much of it's rambling, much of it's all over the place. So I do believe that I'm not going to make this a double feature. I'm probably going to make this its own show, because otherwise the file is going to be way too big. So I'm going to make two different shows if I can get my other one put up there as well. So I'll publish the first one, or yesterday's show first, and then I'm going to publish this show. But in the meantime, I would like to thank you for listening. Listening. I'm listening. And just the thoughts that you put into your day, everything that's going on with the world around us, and what we see coming up here in these elections that will be very much upon us very quickly. And I think that the things are going to start to unfold very quickly. Interesting that the news media is saying what it's saying right up front. I think they're panicking in some ways because they don't know what the DNC has planned. They will soon because they have a lot of meetings together. So there are insiders in the media, I think, that know what's going to happen. Or what the plans are, plan B, B, C, and D, E, and F. In the meantime, I think that the rank and file out there are still in the dark and they're just panicking. So there you go. There you have it, folks. That's the show. And I want to thank you for listening. Thank you for entertaining me as I entertain you. We have a show tomorrow morning from Columbia, Missouri. And then next week we will be back Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week. Pretty much pretty sure that that's, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week. There will be shows. Pretty much sure of that. Probably one of those shows will be from the worldwide headquarters. Once again, folks, thanks for listening. God bless and have a great day.